There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
All right, guys, this is Stack and Pennies presented by Mobile One. Big, big show in store. Turning the page, new look of the show coming right up. Hope you guys are going to enjoy it. William Byron, the Big Hat Bandit, gets another one. Dominates at the Glen Forest Series High. Fifth win of the year. I had a wild weekend. Crazy Arca race on the pole, qualified well, starting the back. We'll go through all that. Pit Row Boats and Woes, and then we're headed to Daytona for the regular season finale. Everything's up in the air. Well, who's it going to be? This is Stack and Pennies. Buckle up. It's going to be going.
Stacking them deep, selling them cheap.
It tastes like gasoline, rubber, and victory.
We're just out here stacking pennies.
Hello, friends. I am Corley Joy, driver of the number 7 Chevy Camaro. Little different here in the show today. Joined to my left, good buddy, front tire changer of Ryan Blaney's Ford Mustang, Ryan Flores.
Back in the game this week.
Let's go. Feeling good?
Feeling like... Feeling dangerous.
Ooh, like a dangerous dog. Oh, and that's a familiar laugh. If those who are listening, somebody I'm super excited to have on the show. I've been excited since the moment we've been able to work it out for her to be a co-host for this thing, to just give y'all banging content each and every week. Somebody who I think very highly of, and I love her takes on the sport, and I love her perspective. So give me a warm Stack and Pennies welcome on the show for Miss Danielle Trotta. Let's go.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here. I listen to you guys every week. So when you asked me to come in, I'm like, easy. Yes. Let's do this.
Well, now it's yours. So if the
feet
show sucks.
Feet on the table.
Yes.
Is what we do.
If the show sucks, you're part of it now.
All right, cool.
We have no other excuses. So we have, the backdrop is, a little unique. We have Kevin Harvick cars because we are presented by Mobile One, obviously.
Right.
We have a sweet Ken Block picture sign over there. Rest in peace. A sweet Richard Petty sign photo and Cale Yarborough gurney and Junior Johnson sign.
We need to get like a big Ran 75 greatest driver swag something.
Ooh. Or a diecast car would be cool.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
That would be cool. So welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So there was really and truly no better person I thought could come supplement the show with us. You and I have spent a lot of time on track when I fill in for Larry Mack on
yes.
SiriusXM, and I hear all the time at the racetrack people love when I'm on there the banter you and I have, because we do have mutual respect for the sport. We all both want it to succeed, no matter if it's on the media side or competition side or entertainment side, but we have different perspectives, and
right.
we can generally talk through that. So I'm excited to hear your hot takes on the show and maybe get into a little argument or two. But you're back.
I'm back.
How you feeling?
I feel good. I didn't feel as good as you this weekend. Damn. When did you learn how to run road courses?
quick story. So we get there. It was a deal with Jeff Spraker, who's been a friend of mine. My 1970 Barracuda that I'm putting a Hellcat motor in, he has it. And he's doing all the stuff that I'm not capable of doing, such as wiring and all the stuff. One, I don't have time for. Two, I don't have the knowledge to do it, so it's been over at his shop. 2 weeks ago, I was over there, and he says, hey, man, I've got this car ready to go to the Glen. The guy who was going to drive it backed out. Do you want some laps, and do you want to run this? Would you race this thing at the Glen? I was like, sure. What else am I going to do on a Friday, right? So I brought him over a seat, checked the car out. They don't race full-time. They've had a couple people in and out. Generally, it's not the fastest car, so I didn't really want to publicize that I was doing. I wanted to kind of come in like the Stig with my helmet on, put my head down, and just see what kind of pace we had.
Yeah, because last week it came up before the show. Hey, like, let's talk about the Arca race for Roots, and you said no.
Because it can be an absolute box.
Yeah, you said, I don't know how it's going to go.
So I'll take you through that. So, like, right off the truck, I think we were second in practice, run two laps, the left front tire starts to, like, shake real bad. So I come down pit road, hey, I feel like I either flat spotted this thing, which I don't think I slid a tire. Oh, camber shims fell out. Let's tighten these back up, put a hose clamp on them. Go back out. Okay, we're getting it to drive a little better with rear spring, track bar stuff. And I got a right front shake now. Well, the right front camber shims fell out.
Which they fall out there because of the curbs.
Because you are just annihilating the curbs, right? So, yeah, if you don't have a hose clamp on them, they're probably going to shake loose, which they did within the first two runs. We had a minor rear end gear leak. We had to come do all that. So we weren't good enough to be like race winning car yet in practice. So I borrowed some spring rubbers and jammed a bunch of spring rubbers in the rear springs, changed track bar height around a little bit. I said, as long as this thing's tight, like I'm going to go lay a heater of a lap down. Simultaneously, after practice in between, we're nutting, bolting the car to make sure nothing falls off. Tyler Young's, he's pitted behind us. He's got Parker Redslaff driving this car. And anybody that doesn't know Tyler Young, he owns the truck team. He owns his ARCA team. And he's like a Texas boy, funny as hell. He was like, damn, well, you come out of that gate and you were pretty good. I said, Tyler Young, I don't mean to sound any way by this, but I've got a motor home in that lot across the street and a pretty nice house in Davidson, all by being able to drive a race car pretty good.
Yeah.
I would hate to think I couldn't in the setting that I'm at right now, it not least be close to the top of the sheet, no matter what car I'm driving. So it's, and then Josh Wise too, him and Scott Speed, I run into one of those guys after practice and, you know, they're watching, they help that Connor Zilich kid. Who's a wheel man. He was on the outside pole. He said they're watching cars and they're timing Connor Zilich and everybody else through the bus stop because we were a little bit late to go out to practice. And Connor's like a second faster than everybody through the bus stop, right, start to finish. And he said they just see the 63 car on the chip, bouncing over the curbs, all four tires off the ground, and I was a second faster than Connor. He goes, oh, who was driving this thing? And they like look at time and score, like, oh, okay, like Corey's driving him. So that was qualifying on the pole. And then we get in the race, and it's, like, kind of raining, kind of not. We stayed on slicks, pull out to a lead, and, like the third or fourth lap, I go through the carousel, and there was a piece of brake duct hose on the racetrack. And I was like, I wonder whose brake duct hose is that? Like, two laps later, my brake pedal starts to get long. I'm like, oh, that's my brake duct hose. And I went down at a 10. Like, I don't know, two or three laps before the stage break, and it went to the floor like Jimmy Johnson style. So I said, I'm done. I'm good. I'm, like, younger Corey probably would have rode it out, but, like, I am not messing around with this today. So, unfortunately, I thought we had a car that could have contended for the win, but had brake issues. But
how much did it help you firing off? Like,
big
time. It's funny that you talk about just the bus stop there, right? Because you make up so much time just in the bus stop. And
for sure.
I think – when I watched the broadcast for practice, and I don't know if you can attest to this or not, that's like the only part they showed because it was so interesting. And you blow your lap there. Like, that's where everybody makes or breaks it. And you can tell the one time you had a big moment in practice where you got off into the grass on exit.
Yeah.
How much did it help you being able to rifle something that's a little bit clunkier, four speed, then you get into what would be like a sports car on Saturday morning with your cup car to rifle it off in there?
I've been talking about it a lot, but a lot of it's like, well, there's the confidence piece, which we can touch on in a second, but it's like a exaggerated track walk, right? Because it's all relative. Like, you know what corners you got to be early with your hands. You know which areas that you get a little bit of brake shake or a little bit of wheel hop in. And even though it's a completely different car, different weight, different horsepower and downforce, like a lot of the same things apply. Where the bumps are at, where the concave of the track is. So it's slower. It was like 3 seconds slower than the cup car. So it's like you get to see the track slower and it's not quite as stressful. So I was able to get in the cup car and just instantly be on pace, where that showed because we were second in practice, which is like, holy moly, where did this come from? And it came from a lot of work on the simulators. It came from a lot of work in looking at SMT and learning how to get our cars to drive better. But also just for me, it's like the last 3 months of road course prep, it's like clicked for me like a light switch with braking, stability and confidence into the zone, and just reprogramming my brain from being like a short track oval guy to learn how to do a road course is completely different way of attacking a brake zone. So that's what's been a big difference for me, and it's cool to see, because rarely in my situations in my career have I had results that show the amount of work that I put on the back end. So to have paced, make it second round in qualifying for the first time in my career, which I would have lost a house that the first time making it in the second round would have been a road course. Qualify 10th, and then we have to start in the freaking back.
Dude, when I saw that, like Bob Pockris's Twitter, like to the rear for unapproved adjustments, like LaJoy, I'm like, oh, no,
so
no.
I knew it so Saturday night, Ryan's like, hey, great job in qualifying. I'm giving you a heads up that there is a high likelihood we're going to have to change left front shock because the seal around that holds the fluid is leaking. So I was kind of hoping they would just like ship it and then we would figure it out later. But it was leaking too bad on Sunday morning to not change.
I wanted to see you start top 10. Yeah, that would have been
days of thunder vibes.
Oh, dude. Cool. Yeah, that's not the answer I was looking at either. Dang it. Because, right. You know, you look at the rundown and GM gives a pre-race report every week of like particularly road courses, but anywhere. Like heat maps of the racetrack they'll send you of like where to pass, where successful passes happen, where unsuccessful passes happen. And Watkins Glen, there was just all red. Like there's no places to pass. And they also rank the tracks in terms of like tire degradation, but like the ability for successful passes. And it's Watkins Glen is the worst for successful passes. And then like infinitely lower than that is all the other tracks. It's just the way it's laid out. With no yellows, you get this weird thing where if you're in a pack of like three or four cars and the guy in front of you is holding everybody up, you can't quite get there or move the guy in front of you. Because then if you move that guy in front of you, you can't pass the next guy. And the guy you just moved out of the way is going to move you back. So
frustrating.
It was freaking frustrating.
Yeah.
But I got a side of my story and it's not about racing. I'm in a good mood. Career best qualifying effort. Let's freaking go. Load all the kids up. We're going to the Watkins Glen State Park.
Oh, Levi's. I want to hear this. Levi's. Denny Hamlin's got a version.
Yeah, I've got a version because I heard his version. My man's got – Levi's got his Lightning McQueen Crocs on. We start to the top. So there's two different ways you can do it, right? You can park at the top, follow it down, and if you're a real man, you turn around and go back up or you take the shuttle. Or you start at the bottom, vice versa, right? So apparently, Denny and his family start at the bottom. We started at the top, so we found ourselves right in the middle. And I'm walking, like, you kind of walk, if you're walking up, you like looking at the waterfall, which is pretty sweet. It's narrow, 3 or 4 feet in some places, and like there's just a constant stream of people, and there's like puddles, and some places it's super muddy. And Levi's already kicked mud up the back of my legs, on my shoes. So I'm walking kind of with my head down, but you're also like, when you're a dad, you got your head on a swivel, like watching your kids and make sure they don't go in the water, right? Like a freaking dead log floating down the water. And I'm watching Levi and I see like pants like you're wearing, like the tight joggers and these nice ass white hiking shoes. I don't even know the brand of them. And Levi just happened to 2 feet stomp in this mud puddle. And I look at this wave of mud that somehow miraculously missed his shoes. And I was like, oh, look, there's Denny. I said, what's up, pole sitter? Good lap today. Something like that. And he took a good 2 seconds to examine if there was any mud on his pants or shoes. Apparently there was some mud on the other person, but
like a random person or someone in his family?
No, his family's behind him. Okay. He was leading the way. And then Levi just went ham and just blasted some mud. Apparently none got on him. It looked like it was a monsoon worth of mud that went on his shoes. I instantly, whenever I got service, Googled how much his shoes cost to see if I owed him a favor.
Who hikes in white pants or white shoes?
He wasn't. They were like.
Yeah, but he on his like, podcast, did he not say there's somebody with white pants? Okay,
yeah,
that's
he said
their
that
mistake.
Levi blasted a lady stomping in mud puddles that had white pants. Like he was fine, she was not.
See, I bashed my head in the bus stop about 90 times, so maybe my memory doesn't serve me well. I don't recall a woman in white pants in the vicinity. I recall him in light-colored pants and white shoes assessing if any mud got on either one of those items. That's how my memory serves me. And then saw him again on the way down, right? So we like this, And then we see each other too at the Mexican restaurant. I had a day full of Denny Hamlin.
Still stuck on white shoes and a hiking trip.
Now, if that's a fair point, I didn't really realize how muddy it was.
Well, it rained the day before, and it's a waterfall. It's not completely dry.
Valid point.
And you're hiking.
Well, it's not the kids' fault.
No, but it's not like you're going to sit front row at a Hornets game. Right? Like, hey, man. I'm sure he's got enough shoes where he doesn't have to wear white ones.
But what he if seemed he... cool about it. Like, he was like, he said Corey, like, apologized at the restaurant, felt really bad.
No, I did, because his reaction.
And he was like, it's good.
His reaction, from what I saw with my own two eyes, was not as cool as he made it sound on his podcast.
Okay.
Which I appreciate.
But in his defense, we've all been with our kids, and you see somebody that wants to, like, talk or be cool, and you're like, hey, you're just over it. We've all been out with our kids where we're like, hey, for man, sure. Like you, I'm over it.
Yeah, yeah, and I still got half this damn thing to go. Maybe where he was at.
And he's got, look, I'm not hating on his white shoes. He's got enough money and enough shoes, I'm sure, to wear whatever shoes he wants hiking.
They were nice shoes.
Yeah, if you ruin those, he's got like 500 more.
I'm sure.
There's some things he's short on, and shoes is not one of those things. So now I digress. Where are we at now?
Well, you're just talking about the line, getting stuck in lines.
It was weird. We've always called Watkins Glen like the super speedway of road courses, right? But it was this weird thing. If like the guy five cars in front of you, like for example, at the end of the race, we were on the wrong side of the caution. A lot of guys that I was in front of flipped it. So like the 38, the 47, a couple of those guys that finished 11th, 12th, 13th. I'm not going to say got lucky, but they made the right call to pit where we didn't, and they flipped us, and we just couldn't pass. Where the two – so I came out like 20th, 21st, all the way up to like 15th was in a line under a blanket. The two, the 41, the one, the three, me, and then the five had a pit road penalty. What, a speed maybe?
Yeah, speeding.
So he was coming from the back, and he was behind me for three or four laps. And if I was content to like keep him back there, I probably could have kept him back there. But I'm like, I'm going to let him go to maybe make some holes, and I'll just try to follow him. He gets to the three, and they are racing. And now these guys are like still the third, fourth car in line. And I'm like two cars back, saving brakes, saving tires, hoping to maybe make a run at them at the end. And the three's on his door, and they're down the backstretch, and they're dooring, and they're racing into the bus stop, and they're smashing each other. Finally, the five roughed him up into the bus stop and got by him with like six to go. Well,
so this started way sooner than I thought.
Yeah.
We didn't get to see any of that
on
the broadcast.
So the entire time the five was in front of Austin, I guess Austin was just planning on just launching him on the last lap. Because you're just sitting there like watching the five and the one now race each other, burning their stuff up. Meanwhile, you're cooling your stuff down because you know your only shot to get by that person is to move them. So I'm like – two back from the three, we go into, I call it 10, but I think it's six. The last left-hander on the last lap. And the three burns it in there, smashes the three or the five, and the five is like way out. And now I'm like, okay, I'm going to just lift and try to turn underneath of him. And Kyle didn't even like make the corner. He literally just drove it straight in the side of the three and spun out. And I couldn't even get it woed up for as much as they hit each other and slowed down. I almost got by unscathed, and it slowed me down just enough to the 42 freaking got me. But it was a battle, which I would have loved to see where we could have ran had we started 10th. But nonetheless, I told my guys in my post-race meeting today that I was proud of our effort on road courses. We've been making it way better. I'm getting some confidence into the zones, just overall like confidence in that I can actually do it. And then you go listen to a post-race interview in Bubba's.
Yeah.
You and I talked about it a little bit of like, I think some people don't appreciate Bubba's openness. I think that there's two different ways to look at it.
I'm on both sides of it, right? Like
If you had to pick one side, what do you want?
If I wasn't friends with Bubba, I would have no compassion.
Yeah.
Since I'm friends with Bubba,
addressing the battles that it, like the self-doubt talk.
So I think everybody deals with that. not even in the race cars, on top of the pit box, over the pit wall. Anybody in the sport has a lot of pressure. And Steve Letarte told you and I one time, and I think about it often, and I've thought about it a lot the last 5 weeks where I haven't had to travel. You don't realize how stressful your job is till you don't do it for a couple weeks. Mm. And you're like, damn, this is a crazy way to make a living.
Well,
right?
you're sitting there talking to me about all the different brunch spots you're hitting up on a Sunday morning.
Pretty nice. Pretty nice, right? And you can get down the weeds.
Milk bread? Do you do a little milk bread?
We did a Ruby Sunshine.
Oh, they're going to freaking Daisy, having mimosas.
Yeah, ain't bad. It's not bad.
The Bloody Marys with the crab legs in them.
Crew screams and shuts the whole place down, no matter if there's a 2 hour wait or not. But, like, I think it's good to be transparent. But then there's another part of me that's like, all right, hey, man, like, you're building a 10,000 square foot house for a reason. This shit ain't easy.
Yeah.
Right? And, like, that's where,
and you're compensated for it.
So I don't know. Like, I sometimes I see Bubba and he's super transparent, and then other times I see Bubba and he's like, it's like he's hiding behind it, and he's kind of a little bit arrogant. So, like, I don't know what's what. Like, I think he's fighting an inner battle, and yeah, it's gonna, dude. If you this weekend for him, because we were in the situation of the 12 car last weekend, is a very challenging weekend.
Yeah.
Not only because you try to do everything you can for your team, but it's also out of your hands for the most part. You have to, like, it's going to be a big weekend for him.
So, Danielle, what do you think about drivers being outspoken publicly on that wrestle of, like, self-doubt and confidence?
I mean, I found that interview extremely endearing.
Okay.
Like, I was like, that makes me like him even more.
Really?
Yeah, 100%. Like, yeah. I thought it was really honest. I was talking to my parents at the beach about this a week ago. Like, none of us, the three of us, understand what Bubba's going through. And you've talked about this before. We will never understand some of the things that he deals with. And you guys know him really well. Like, I can't imagine psychologically where that lives, but all of that, like, hate and that pressure lives somewhere. And I think it would mess with anybody. Like, the strongest of people could get totally spun out by it. So I don't know if that affects, like, what he shares and what he doesn't, but I agree with you, Ryan. Like, a lot of people are like, dude, just drop the chip that's on your shoulder, because he leads with that a lot in interviews. And I don't know what that is, but I thought what we saw in the interview post-race Sunday was the opposite of that. Like, it was so endearing, and it was refreshing, honestly. Like, I was like, that's a Bubba that's, like, could be extremely likable. Like, I liked that side of him.
Do you think it's a defense mechanism? Like, he kind of leads with that chip on his shoulder at times because he's trying to manufacture a little bit of confidence?
Well, I think everybody handles stress and pressure and expectations differently, because I think, let's just use another example of Chase, right? And I think that Chase oftentimes, for me, he's like, they could run out of gas and he'd get out of the car, man, I just got to do better. Didn't do a good job in qualifying. It's my fault. They had to change the strategy up. I put Alan in a bad spot. And it's like, there are some times where I am all about owning, like, extreme ownership of everything you can do better. But there are some times it's like, Chase, okay, like, I got it. Like, you know, I know, like, give us something cheery. Yeah. Like, give us something to be excited
he's
about.
He's just, like, not an emotional guy, though.
Yeah.
Like,
and he's consistent.
He's consistently like that. And I feel like Bubba's, like, a really emotional guy. And you're going to ride those highs and lows with him.
Which, I think everybody goes through the highs and lows. It's just, personally speaking, as an active athlete, I wouldn't want to put that out there to the other competitors. That's just how I view it. Like blood in the water a little bit, right? Because when he made a comment earlier in the year of just like, I suck, and they something like I suck, and they need to replace me or something like that. I that's not quoted.
After he wrecked out.
Yeah, they
like mid-season.
Yeah, they need to find somebody better. And I was like, bro,
you
cannot say that because
that
door open and that thing will get opened up for you.
Don't manifest that.
No, like that, and that's it. It's like, if you believe that, like, that was me for several years. I believe that I sucked at road courses, and I just said it. But I also knew I had to put the work in to get better at it. But if I held on to that thought of, like, I'm always going to suck at road courses, then I will never get any good at it. So it's as much – what, he go talk to Scott Dixon, right? And he was like, just stop being a pansy.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, that's what he said. But listen, if you're Bubba Wallace, it's teed up for you on a plate this weekend. Him and his team.
But
and
is
Freddie
it
Kraft,
though?
I mean, they've been great at super speedways.
Oh, no doubt. But so, how do you race then? Do you attack it? Do you attack it aggressively? Because if you wreck out, then you might be.
You got to lead these races, dude.
Yeah, you got to lead the super speed race.
Like, wait, it's not like it used to be where you can hang out in the back.
Yeah.
Denny said, because he was asked, like, how do you want Bubba to approach Daytona? And he said, ride Ty Gibbs' ass all day. Like, wherever he is, you're on his bumper.
I think.
Because he can't gain points on you.
Yeah. And also, if you're in a wreck, you're in a wreck too.
Yeah.
And
right.
Hope there's somebody else in
hope there's not a repeat winner. The, or there's the not a first time winner.
Perfect person to ask about this is Larry McReynolds. Because if you go back to the 1992 Atlanta, right, that was their plan with Davey. And he ended up getting in a wreck because he was riding where he shouldn't have been instead of running his own race. And they lost championship because of it. You run your own race. And Bubba Wallace is going to have a car that's capable of winning that race and a team that's capable of winning that race. And that needs to be his goal. Go there, run up front all day, and put yourself in position to win a race.
Yeah. But if there's 15 other guys, 30 other guys with the intention of doing the same thing.
Yeah, but there is every week.
That's a good point.
Right? Like last year we went there. Look, you can run around in the back all day. You did it, right? You've ridden in the back and then
yeah, you
the
can run eighth.
Freaking JJ Yaley blows a tire in front of you and you're wrecked. And you're like, "Oh, what the hell? I could have just wrecked in the front pack." So you,
right.
The only way the only way
why are you gonna pick on JJ Yaley?
I'm just cuz he usually rides in the back.
But they finished top 10.
Sometimes.
Or blow a tire.
Sometimes if everybody wrecks.
Yeah.
If the only way, and it's going to be hard, but the only way to really control your own fate is to be in front of as many cars as you can be in front of all day and try to win a race. If you lead every lap and win the race, and that's what we saw at Atlanta, right? Like, it's hard to get track position now at super speedways. It's not like it used to be where the runs come
right.
easier and you can just pass guys. Like, you can get out front and control the lanes. If he gets out front with a couple of Toyotas around him, Could be tough, but it's going to be hard to beat them Fords.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Your pennies stretch as far as they used to? Most likely it doesn't. Here's why. It took 200 years for the U.S. to print its first $5 trillion. Today, Washington has done that in just 3 years. The problem, every new dollar makes each one of your dollars worth less, robbing you and every other hardworking American. But you can stop this cycle of robbery by diversifying your IRA or 401k into gold. An asset that has stood the test of time. Our new sponsor, Birch Gold Group, has helped tens of thousands of Americans protect their retirement savings with physical precious metals. Now you can too. Get a free info kit on gold right now by texting the word Corey, C-O-R-E-Y, to 989-898. With an A-plus rating with the BBB, you're in good hands with Birch Gold. So get your free info kit by texting Corey to the number 989-898. Go check them out. Put some pennies in some gold. I know we're sitting here talking about Daytona and the end of the regular season, but let's go back. Who would have had Billy Beard Byron 5 wins on the season at this point?
Kyle Petty.
Yeah. That's who I was thinking
yes.
of. He called him the next Jeff Gordon.
I
was like, dude, where are you getting that? I think it was like last year, and I was like, I don't see it. Like, what? I don't know. Maybe it's coming to I know like Jeff Gordon and 5 wins. There's like a massive leap there, but I didn't see this kind of season coming.
But I mean, he's won on every variation of track that we go to, intermediates, Atlanta, road course, short tracks.
So when Kyle Petty sat right where you're sitting a couple weeks ago, he said William Byron is a bus driver where he leads his team.
Okay.
And the thing that I saw when William Byron got out of the car, he didn't just talk about me and Rudy. He talked about Rudy. He talked about his engineer by name. He talked about his engineer back at the shop by name. He talked about his spotters. He talked about Max Pappas. He's in it, dude. He's tapped in.
No doubt.
And he's working with his guys. That is not, and you talk about confidence, right, and how you've gotten better. Confidence is earned, right? You can try to manufacture confidence. You can read, like you said, you can read books on confidence, and you can do all that, and that's all good. But you have to earn it by working with your guys
executing.
And stacking pennies, right? Yeah. And his stack's getting pretty high.
No question.
Rudy, also, when I brought him in, I was like, man, when I didn't bring anybody in. When they brought him in to there, I thought that was an interesting crew chief choice for a place that usually promotes from within.
Yep.
But damn, like William knew he needed somebody and trusted him from working with him in the past.
Yeah. It's their relationship, dude. Yeah. I'd say it all the time. That crew chief driver relationship is like a marriage without the benefits. I mean, it really is. Like you're jumping out of an airplane together and there's one parachute and you got to figure out how to get to the bottom. Yeah. I mean, the fact that they get at the time, probably a questionable hire, right? Where there's probably a list of guys that are more at the time, quote unquote, qualified for that role, but it was the right guy for William Byron. And if we know anything about Rick Hendrick, he's the best about pairing the right people together to get the most success out of them. So really cool to see William have the success he has. Is he a championship favorite?
What do you think? You don't think he's a championship
favorite?
Too early. We only got 11 weeks to go.
No. I can't go
there. Well, you had something you were going to say.
No, I was going to say flip side of the coin. Like, that's what's like gravy at Hendrick. Like, flip side, what happened to the 9? Like, where were you for, like, did you go back and watch it? Were you like, what? How did that happen?
Well,
I don't know how that happened either.
First off, AG is a stud. I mean,
yeah,
one of my favorite people in the garage. I don't know where the calculation of maybe it was 3 miles and there was a miscommunication and there was 3 laps because every time we go, we just say run to the switch. Right. So when you are going long and you want to get every ounce of fuel, that way your tank is empty, close to empty. When you fill it up, you get the furthest distance you can go towards the end of the race and you get a full tank. You don't want to pit earlier, leave some fuel in the tank. Right. And then you're backing your race up. When you run to your light at an intermediate, let's just say when Ryan says to me, hey, run to your light.
That's your switch.
That's your
fuel light.
Reserve switch, where there's a baffle in the left side corner of the fuel cell that holds like three quarters of a gallon of fuel.
It's enough fuel to, when you run out of gas, it gets you back to pit road.
Yes.
And keeps your car running until they fill it up. That's what that switch is.
For generally a lap and a half at an intermediate. So that would be 2.6 miles. I don't know when so you'll have an alert on your dash that says fuel pressure low. You flip your switch, then it runs off that reserve tank, and then once you're done with that, there's no more gas. I don't know when. So Chase was the first one on pit road for the cycle at lap 18. So the numbers to get it to the window to maximize your fuel load was 22 and 56, I believe, or 55. So he was 4 laps early, so he needed to go longer in that middle stint to get to his window to finish the race, had it gone green. And that is not a championship team move to miss it by that much.
Dumb question. Your pickup on any weekend is on the right side.
Yeah.
So the reserve is on the left side because the gas gets pushed to the right side. Since Watkins Glen is dominantly right-hand turns, the gas is sloshing now to the left side.
Mm.
Is that maybe what they were thinking about?
I don't know. I didn't go back to listen to communication.
It's a big miss for a team of that a championship team that's on the fringe, right? So there is something there. Even though he said we got bad information, like Alan owned it. Hey, we got bad information here. It's still like they're too calculated to just be like, oh, yeah, I read the wrong text message, right?
Yeah, that's they are much stronger than what they portrayed there. But also, I think that just goes to show even the best and the most qualified and champions in the sport are human. Like you make mistakes, and sometimes you don't carry the one.
But like the other crazy thing is like it's not just the guys on the box. Like maybe you got a sense of this when you were there. Like how many people are in that war room? Like
two.
Everyone back in Concord.
Two per team. So the nine has two guys at home. The 2-4 has two guys at home. And those guys, they also have a whole nother team scanning everybody else, like making notes on what they're doing for adjustments.
Really?
It's a different layer of racing than just fill that thing up with gas, put four on it. No. Like and that's why Gateway was tough because the internet went out a quarter of the way through the race, so it was back to normal racing, I guess. And we didn't have the strength of that team on the back end of like to run pit road situations and potentially flip and get a little bit of track position that weekend. But yeah, that was confusing to me for sure for those guys to of all cars to run out of gas, right?
Speaking of not really having opportunities to flip stages and all that, what do you think about no stage breaks? I'd like it more than I do.
Just like I'm sure Danielle, people call up on SiriusXM last year. Why do we need them stage breaks? Them stage breaks are dumb. All we do is wreck. So now we need jerk reaction. You know what? We're not going to throw a yellow for stage breaks. We're just going to keep it moving. Oh, wait. It's going to run like every other single road course race that's ever ran on our road course with no cautions and one guy stuck in the gravel trap. I don't know what we expected here by taking stage break cautions out. That's the only –
Did you guys ask for this?
Maybe the three or four guys that are exceptional road courses made a case, right? To like say, hey, there was an instance. I don't know how you can keep stage break cautions. What messes it up is the guys flipping it, electing to not take stage points.
Right.
So you get somebody that's been on the pole, leading the race, comes down because they want it. Maximize their day and take stage points. Now they come out 22nd and then they get crashed. So I think after two or three instances of that, they're like, well, we need to swing this pendulum back to the competition side a little bit, away from the entertainment side, and give credit where credit's due to the guys who have earned their track position. Where I almost feel like what we've done with the restart zones at Indy and
Chicago
and potentially some other tracks that we go to string us out into that first braking zone would cure a lot of that issue. But
you know what else would cure
it? You got to have yellows.
You know what else would cure it?
What?
All the guys that have the buses and make a lot of money like you were talking about.
What do you do? Want to wreck each other?
Brake pedal. That could help it.
For what?
Remove the restart zones and change this because like you said earlier.
There's a lot of times NASCAR has to save us from ourselves.
I agree with you, but like what do you do to fix it?
I think stage brakes is a start. Like
back to normal, what they just do?
Well, yeah. I mean, if you get a stage break, you're like, okay, I get why TV wanted to do it, dumb commercials.
How about a tweak? Look, here's my tweak. Bring back stage break yellows. Instead of closing pits two laps early, like they do now, you close it like five laps early. You can still try to flip the stage if you want to, but now you're at a bigger tire disadvantage for the guys that do flip it.
Let me take it one step further.
Give me your tweak.
We know how many laps we can run on fuel. Everybody can run the same amount of laps of fuel. Just make it 3 laps after the fuel window or 10 laps after the fuel. It doesn't have to be. So the stage breaks at mile and a half are like 60, 120, and then 300, mm-hmm. right? It doesn't have to be that. We could, if the race is 100 or say, yeah, if the race is 100 laps, you can do, 35 and 35 and then a sprint to the end to get past the fuel window.
Yeah.
But they're like right at that weird spot where you can shortcut it. Like
and not pay the penalty.
But at mile and a half or anywhere else, if there's like a tire that gets away on pit road, right, that's not in the way, we let everything cycle before we put the caution out. Which it could be the same way with the stages. Everything cycles, then the stage is over after the cycle. We know what the fuel is going to be. So if you wanted a pit on lap 5, right? You know there's a caution at lap 35. So you take it, you pit early, or you pit right before it. Like, you could make that parity. I think the problem is where the caution falls, not that the caution is falling.
I'll tell you what, being in with no freaking break, let me pull up my Whoop data right quick.
was it worse than kickball?
Not as bad as kickball. That was a 10,000 calorie day. Sunday was a 4,200 calorie day, so not super high, but
damn.
You are with one yellow break,
yeah,
with that nine yellow. I was 80 to 90% of my heart rate for an hour and 10 minutes. Mm. Average 150 beats a minute, max 175 beats per minute. And you're in that for 2 hours and 20 minutes. Luckily, that was the fastest Cup Series race since 1971.
Yeah.
I'd have fell out if it was any longer than that.
The fastest one?
Yeah.
Really?
Since a 100-mile race at Hickory.
Damn.
I mean, bring back stage breaks and some cautions and some crashes.
And, like, that'll help the entertainment side of things. Like, you guys figure out the math. Like, I don't care when care the numbers and when you pit and when you close it. That's the competition side. On the entertainment side, more restarts, more ability for contact, like, more side-by-side racing. But, like, I think something that you guys probably agree with and fans probably agree with is, like, more side-by-side racing, more ability to pass. I think bringing back the stage breaks is, like, a good start.
Yeah, you re-rack it for sure.
But how do you get past, you said it earlier, like, we're all running the same speed and you're just back there. It's got to be so frustrating. How do you fix that?
Oh, we don't have enough time, Danielle, for that. There's so many layers, because people want to say, oh, I'll just take downforce away and give them power. We have less downforce now with these cars than Jeff Gordon did in 1993 before they realized that air actually matters to race cars. The cars have zero downforce. They have a lot of tire on the ground, independent rear suspension, front suspension. Like, the cars handle pretty good, even though they don't have much downforce. Like, you are slipping and sliding around. It's not like the cars are just glued to the racetrack, but the margin for error is a bit bigger with these cars, where the old cars, an Xfinity car currently, you can wheel hop. So if you don't match the revs perfect, it'll chop the rear tires and you can miss a corner. Now you just lock the rears up a little bit and then you just grab a gear and then you just keep going. So NASCAR's on the competition side's in a hard place to be with, you know, they've got that up down splitter they're trying to experiment with. But when you saw, and I keep going back to the Tony Stewart quote from Indy, is like, if you want it's called racing, it's not passing.
Correct.
If you want to see passing, go on I-485 and go pass some Crown Vic on the side of the road. Now everybody has the same parts and pieces, and the difference is setup, which can vary quite a bit, but now everybody's starting to learn what makes these cars drive good. So the avenues that was probably infinite last year is like, there's only like six or seven ideologies to skin the cat now instead of like a ton. So I think Ty qualified last this week, and it was like 1.2 or 1.1 seconds from the guy first. Like,
it's tighter than it's ever been.
So when you get 32 cars that are within a second, you're talking, what is that, 400 or 500 per spot. So if you qualify, if the guy in front of you is the same speed, the guy behind you is the same speed, there's really not much that's going to differentiate the two and allow you to pass somebody unless they are really a lot slower than you. So I think that's just also something that the fans are going to have to get used to, and the broadcast has to explain why it's so crucial to run a perfect race. Because you can't give up track position and expect to drive back to the field. Kyle Larson can speed on pit road and get back to 20th. You have to be perfect, which is why it's so impressive to see William Byron punch his card five times.
Yeah.
Because winning a cup race now is as hard as it's ever been. Let's just transition here to pit road, boats, and woes, shall we? We got a lot of breakdown. Couple penalties cost some guys the day. We're going to break that down. Pit road, boats, and woes, guys, right after this.
I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and a broom. A performance-enhancing broom. My name is John Cullen. I'm a comedian, podcaster, and for 20 years, I was a semi-professional curler. And I want to tell you the story about how a single broom almost imploded the 500-year-old sport of curling.
We felt like we were bringing a knife to a gunfight.
It's the story of a superstar and his fall from grace.
Well, I was being dragged through the mud.
It's the story of two brother entrepreneurs with a dream.
Yeah, I said, that's great news.
It's a story of intrigue.
I still don't understand why we want to keep his name secret.
The full story has never been told, so I'm going to tell it. Broomgate, how a broom almost killed curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
To listen to Broomgate, search for Broomgate in your favorite podcast app. That's all one word, Broomgate.
For me, race day is a great reason to shut down the laptop, put the phone on silent, and simply enjoy the driving. But Mobile One wants to remind you that you can get that same kind of escape any day of the week. How? By simply hopping in your car, rolling the windows down, and hitting the road. No emails, no calls, no work, just freedom. Mobile One, for the love of driving. Pit Road, boats, and woes. A couple woes on Pit Road. Starting with, McDowell had several woes, didn't he?
Well, the first one, he drove through too many pit stalls. Which
easy to do.
That's what I was going to ask you. So he clipped the fourth one. You're allowed to drive through three.
Yeah.
He clipped the fourth one, which Peterson's argument on the radio was that it was an unoccupied box, but you still can't do it.
Can't do it.
How hard is it as a driver when you're turning in the pit box the opposite way?
It's easy to just kind of get, I guess, lazy to just like start fading into your box, especially if there's no cars, if it's you're wide open under a green flag stop. It's just like, okay, there's my sign. Let me just start easing over like I'm on the highway. But you really have to be deliberate with going straight and then like making a distinct right-hand turn and a left-hand turn into your box. Because I told myself, like, I started fading in early and I'm like, ooh, don't drive through too many boxes. And then like straightened out, went from the outside lane, started fading in. And I'm like, ooh, straightened out in this lane. And then I turned in and probably ran through two boxes. But man, that's just another thing. Like another thing to the infinite list of things you can do to not win a cup race.
Yeah, so you go from also the longest pit boxes on pit road, turning in backwards, so it's not going to be an issue at Indy.
Right.
If you do it at Indy, you have really messed up.
Yeah.
To the shortest backwards, you think they're short and wide like Richmond is, so you have to get out there. So they're short and wide, so you have to get out there quickly, which is what bit them on the second penalty, that their guys were over the wall too soon. So these are both things that you're really not going to see at Indy.
Two separate ones?
Two separate instances, yeah. Yes. So yeah, then Larson sped on pit road. Obviously, we talked about Elliott's woe, which is huge.
Gosh, that's a big woe.
And man, a really awkward situation with Chase Briscoe's lug nut that was stuck on the car. I think it was stuck on the right rear. And I've heard a bunch of different things. Now, I have had this happen to me. To my knowledge, I was the first one that it ever happened to. If you pull the trigger too soon before you are covering the hub and you spool the gun up, these Paoli guns that we use do not have enough horsepower to get them back off. So with five lug nuts, you had to keep the gun spooled up and you'd pop the nut and it'd break it loose. Now it's got too much torque. And if you pull that trigger too soon, we've seen it time and time again. We saw it, notably.
Like it gets a running start.
It gets a running start, and it just, flap, gets there, and it's so tight you can't get it off. We saw it with the 43 last year.
Now, what would be like the torque on something that's stuck like that?
Oh,
1,200 pounds?
No, way north.
Really?
Yes, north of that.
So what's like breakaway torque on the sockets now? Like,
I mean, I think most teams would say a desired torque is 600. I think breakaway torque for most teams after the race is in the 1,000-pound area. I think that I don't know. Like, I don't know
the
real torque.
Like,
I don't
did
know
they have torque. Like the Ugga Dugga 5,000 out there trying to get it off.
They did. So you get like a it's
oh,
like a
monster
gun that looks like, from what I gathered on people on pit road, and this may or may not be true. It could have been going the wrong way when they took it out. Oh, I don't know if that's true or not.
They had the Ugga Dugga 5,000.
I know that
the wrong way.
Whoever was one of the guys on pit road that was watching it was like, they switched a button a couple times. I don't know if they were just trying to loosen it up, but I think if you hit it with that thing and it's going the wrong way, that could be really bad. I think they worked on it for a while to try to get that wheel changed.
Was it the first nut that was on it?
No, I think it was like the last stop of the day. But it's a situation that we've seen time and time again, and we haven't seen it much this year, but it's a thing that can happen. I think that call that thing Thor's hammer. If I pull the trigger a little too soon and get on there, I say, hey, bring me Thor's hammer. I don't know how this one's going to come off or not. Let's just be ready.
Or it's the Ugga Dugga 5000.
Yeah.
One too many Ugga Duggas, man, you'd be in bad shape.
Yeah. So last backwards stop race of the year. Used to just be once. So you always took a little bit of pride doing the fastest stop. But now we have three of them. And the guys.
Who had the fastest backwards stop of the season?
The 20 boys will be.
Oh, yeah.
The dogs backwards dogs.
Reverse dogs.
The backwards dogs. So we got Braxton Brannon, Jackman.
So, you don't know this segment. We introduce the members of the pit crew that are the dogs of the week.
Okay.
And then
I've heard it.
Okay. Well, then
you guys love saying dogs.
Well, you have to say that too.
So, yeah. So, good friend of mine. Been a 22 car guy last year. He retired. Came back out of retirement. I won $100 because I bet him he wasn't going to retire. Braxton Brannon, Jackman.
Dog.
Jackson Gibbs, heir to the Gibbs throne. Front tire changer.
Top dog.
So that is Joe Gibbs' grandson, Jackson Gibbs. He was a App State football player. Kevin Jackson, rear tire changer.
Dog.
Nick McBeth, tire carrier.
Dog.
And Ian Anderson, fueler, also a dog.
Fuel dog.
None of the fuel guys got drugged this weekend. I was happy to see that.
Love to see it.
Backward stops at that place are always something that can bite you.
Keep fuel can safe.
Yep.
Let me ask you a question. How many races have you been out?
5.
Is it weird?
No, they still have 10 more brunch spots to hit in Charlotte on Sunday.
So I have missed 2 races in 17 seasons.
Wow.
One for my daughter being born, and one for sitting close to somebody at a podcast.
Shout out, Merriman.
So I think at first it was really weird the first 2 weeks, but then I kind of just used it as like, I feel like it was like a blessing where I got to spend some time with family. You miss out on so much stuff.
Yeah.
And I got to spend some time in New Jersey with my family. My family's kind of spread out all over the country, so everybody was there at once. So it was nice to get our kids together and then just like spending time together. Like, I've got it. I'm not going to sit here and say I got a heart. I fly out Sunday morning and fly back Sunday night on a private plane. Like, being on a pit crew is not like being on a road crew, or even the drivers have a way more grueling schedule than we do. But it has been nice. You know, you just don't realize, even though you just leave Sunday morning and you only practice maybe, you know, 9 to 12 hours throughout the week, you still live every day as a tire change. Like, Saturday you're preparing, you're hydrating, you're not doing much. So just to kind of not have to do that for a couple of weeks, I felt like was a blessing, but I'm also ready to get back to it.
Do you feel like you're in race shape? Like, what is it like to get back in?
Yeah.
Reps, practice?
Yeah, you like had like a built-in summer break like F1.
Yeah.
A little bit, yeah.
Work that into the contract.
One thing that's really good from this is like when you're changing tires every week, especially throughout a season, by the time you get to the playoffs, you're like dealing with micro injuries everywhere. Something hurts and you've been just beating the crap. If I usually hurt my left hand and you just keep hurting it, and it never heals. So we have team physicians, and like we work with Ortho Carolina. Shout out to Pam, who is our PT, and I've been working with Pam 4 or 5 days a week ever since I've been hurt. She's like, okay, we took a week off, and then that next week we started with light workouts and different techniques that we could do. And when you go in and you just do a bench press or like squat workout, you work big muscle groups. But when you're hurt and you have to do lightweight, you use like, it's almost like you train muscles that you didn't know you've had. So today, like when I got back to actually doing pit stops, the work I've been putting in with Pam, like with 10-pound, 5-pound weights, I feel like I'm in better shape than I was before.
You're maxing out these days, huh?
Yeah. 12 and a half, so I'm getting really crazy.
Big arm day.
But yeah, like that. I feel like I'm in better shape, and I got fresh legs for the playoffs, so I'm ready to go.
Nice.
So.
Dog.
Yes. Old dog learned new tricks.
Oh, yeah.
So
let the dog out of the cage this week.
Oh, yeah. Oh, get back, jumping over the cars in traffic, Daytona.
Yeah.
couple two-tire stops, couple four-tire stops. What do you think?
Yeah, a couple fuel-onlys maybe. Yeah, I think it's just going to depend on where your stage is and your cautions fall. And, I mean, the pressure is so much less than it was last year going here with the scrum we were in with Truex, and then the three car gets in, and we got wrecked, and we had to fix it. So, yeah, I'm excited to just go and have a clean day. And Ryan and our bunch has been so good at speedways. I feel like we should have won Atlanta. If it didn't get rain shortened, we had a really good shot. But you consistently keep running up at the front of speedway races, you're eventually going to win.
So something I found super interesting is it's not like you're just sitting on your couch a lot of the time on Sunday. You were able to, with the intercom system you talk about, literally talk to your team on pit road like you're playing Xbox.
Yeah, I went in the war room and I popped on there. I asked my team every week because I chew gum during the race. And I ask them on the intercom, you guys want any Big Red? And everybody says no. So it's kind of become the joke. So I went to the war room for Indy, and they were all getting ready for a race after the national anthem. They were, like, checking their mics, and I just hit them, you guys want any Big Red? And they're like, huh?
That's crazy. Yeah. That you could, like, just talk to somebody.
Live time.
But yeah. Not all the guys have mic and headset technology,
not every
right?
team
not
does,
every team.
But a lot of teams do now.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of teams are getting there, like – you know, Gibbs was kind of the first ones to have it. 2311 has it. Penske has it now.
In what instance do they come in handy?
Perfect example is what happened with the 99 car at Indianapolis, right? If they had that, they fixed that issue in a second instead of 10.
And yeah, now they're still in the mix. Right?
They didn't. They were just waving their hands, jumping around, and there's just so much to be left for interpretation now with one lug nut where you have to know right away. Like if that thing's not tight, I can scream it on my microphone and our crew chief can tell him to stop instead of waving my hands. Then he's already on the track and it falls off. That's a way different penalty. So yeah, it's just the split second decisions, any help you can get with that to make those calls even quicker. Yeah. That's what you see everybody.
For sure.
Everybody will have them eventually.
Yeah. And they don't compound. It's like, if you can nip that, a loose wheel in the butt right when it drops a jack, you can prevent it falling off or wrecking.
Well, if it falls off on pit road, right, you go tailing the longest line.
Right.
If it falls off on the track,
two laps.
It's two laps, and you lose your guys for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
So there's not a lot of cup-ready guys that can jump in. Dude, shout out to Joe Dilley, who's done my job. He's 20. He's not even old enough to drink. Jumped right in.
Dude, that's
crushed
how,
it.
That's how I felt this weekend in the ARCA race. I'm like, I feel like a freaking dinosaur out here, 31 years old against, like, some 17-year-old kids.
Yeah.
Talking about Fortnite. I don't even know what the kids play anymore.
These guys don't have kids and a mortgage.
No,
not letting them out qualify me.
No, ain't happening. I teach you a lesson. Roblox is what Chuck says. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not up on the times.
Nope.
All right, guys, that's all we got for Pit Road Boats and Woes. Ryan Flores is gonna be back on Pit Road changing for that 12 Mustang this week. We got some Penny for Your Thoughts questions coming up right after this.
Let's face it, people have different sleep needs. While you love your partner, sleeping next to them might not always be the most comfortable. Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Maybe you prefer a firmer mattress and your partner needs something softer. Because of the individualized comfort that you get from Sleep Number smart beds, you and your partner will sleep better together. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. And their temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. The smart beds even automatically respond and adjust to your movements, so you sleep comfortably all night long. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Welcome back, everybody. Time for Penny for Your Thoughts. You ready?
Oh, I stay ready.
Couple fan questions. Fro Leash 42. Should NASCAR go to two different tire compounds for road courses?
Ooh, I've been seeing this question a lot. I just for the sake of wanting to see it, yes. I almost want to do like I'll, like, if we're going to do that, I would almost want, like, you have to run a set, no matter if it's dry, you have to run a set of wet tires one time in the race.
You get so gimmicky.
They're asking for a gimmicky answer.
Well, and they did it one time in 2016 All-Star Race, but they didn't do it right.
Yeah.
Like, it was just kind of like blah.
It just had different letters on the side of the tire, pretty much. It was only worth like two tenths.
But I'm down for it. I think it would be awesome.
What's wrong with that idea? You have to run a set of tires that shred in 10 laps in the dry.
It's not a bad idea. Like, it definitely adds parity. What?
What's your idea?
You would. You also want like a banana peel you can throw out.
Just one.
The paintballs.
Like everybody wants to sit here and fantasize over the best finish in the entire history of NASCAR. Marcus Ambrose and Brad Keselowski. Well, all I have to do every week is to oil the track down. They can get that.
That happened again this week on Sheldon Creed, didn't it?
Yeah. Call it gimmicky. They show replays of it every week. Top 10, greatest race of all time.
Yeah. What do we talk about? At the highest level, you want to give opportunities to be better and worse than everybody, right? That's what will make the sport the best. And that'll just give another tool for if done correctly.
Yeah.
Right? Like this weekend, it would have just been too cut and dry. Okay, this run, we put the soft ones on. This one, we put the hard ones on. But if you have a couple stages and a couple quick races and there is a tire that's 2 seconds faster, but you can only run it for 8 laps at Watkins Glen, like, okay, now you're giving your crew chief a chance to outsmart somebody.
Yeah. Well, then you'd have opportunities to flip and flip guys that you're racing around potentially. So that – I like it. I think there's a lot of stuff to work through there. And unfortunately, it doesn't seem like there's any conversations being had about different tire compounds.
I feel like you don't hear – yeah, no one's really – there's not a lot of buzz behind it.
No.
Not that it wouldn't be cool, but like – wet weather, slicks, like when it's kind of raining, kind of not. Like, I like that.
It makes it interesting.
Yeah. Wasn't that North Wilkesboro? Like, I loved that. Like, I thought that was – but outside of that, I don't hear too many people talking about it.
All I want to do is bring back stage break cautions. Right. Just re-rack it.
Bring them back.
Just bring them back.
Red Raider fan, will GameBridge sponsorship and better owner's points finish this year help open doors to be able to dyno things in-house at Spire?
I presume he's talking about a shock dyno, which we do have a shock dyno. We rebuilt shocks. That shock did run Indy last week and then did not get rebuilt for this week. Ooh. So I think we're probably going to adjust our processes of servicing shocks, I believe, after having that issue this weekend. But yes, the GameBridge piece of that's certainly going to allow us to add some people. We're looking at hiring almost 50% of the amount of people that we have now, 15 to 20 people. So that would be huge for us to grow from a 32-person operation to a close to a 50-team operation or 50-person operation. So I think over the next 6 to 8 months, we're going to get deeper and we're going to get a little more efficient. So I'm excited about that. But yeah, that's certainly one thing we're going to when I was leaving the shop today to drive down here, like the Olin guy who builds the shocks was at our shop going through what potential issue there was. So we're going to learn from it. We're going to get better and not have that issue again, hopefully. I do think that I heard multiple guys had that issue in the race, the same issue with that seal leaking, but they were able to make it the whole race and then have to find out after the race that their shock was low on fluid. But the fact that we knew it going into the race, I guess it would be not wise to just run it and have an issue. Yeah, so we'll learn from that. Keep it moving.
GameBridge, they're stacking, like, more than pennies.
They got lots of pennies over there at GameBridge, so I'm happy to have those guys on our side.
Yeah.
I'm glad they're with not anybody else. Glad they're with us. Do you have a penny for your thoughts, questions?
Yeah, I do. Daytona, I mean, you need a win to get in.
Yes. I think I could point my way. I think I'm only like 300 points short, but I might be able to sneak a couple in there.
Who's somebody that you think has your back that would push you to a win? Like, he's behind me, a dog, that you're like, he's got me.
Yeah, but everybody's just alpha dogs out there. It's just 36 alpha dogs.
Like, who's the guy you want behind you? Final lap.
There's nobody, but I say this a lot. I don't know if I've said it on the show, but you know, you hear Denny talk about if he had the choice to push Ty Gibbs or Bubba, he owns the one. So financially, it's much better for him and his people who he employs to push Bubba to the win.
Right.
But rarely ever is there an opportunity in a race where there's a decision A or B. You get to choose to push this person or not that person. Generally, both lines are tight. You get paired up with who you're already paired up with. Like, it's not like you can, like, look around, like, hey, slingshot, like, Talladega Nights. Like, that's not how it works. So I think what I've learned from Atlanta last year, from running decent on the speedways, it doesn't matter who's behind you. You have to put them in a position to make them have to push you. You know what I mean? Where if you leave a door open, they're going to – everybody there is going to pass you if you leave the door open and you're not defensive. So covering lanes, making sure you keep people behind you, no matter who it is, because there's nobody that's going to be like, you know, I'm content to push Corey here to the win. Nobody's going to say that.
Well, because everyone says you need friends at super speedways. So I'm like –
now, people are more apt to work with a bow tie if you're a Chevy, right, because you're just – you're all week, help Chevys out.
You're hearing that?
So if there's – yeah. So if there's like somebody shucks a Ford out of the line, you're not going to pick him up. If you're like, you're not going to go out of your way to help that guy out. You're going to try to generally stay in line and just try to shuffle your manufacturer more cars to the front of the field. That's kind of the chess game.
See, I'm hoping though that like Joey Logano would forget that for a second.
You don't know Joey.
Like I could see Kyle Larson forgetting that for a minute and be like, yeah, I'll push Corey Lynn. There's another part to it to you, right? Like not trying to hate on you, but like if I'm Joey Logano and I can either push you or I can push Daniel Suarez, right? I would much rather race against you in the playoffs than Daniel Suarez. So I'm pushing you to the win.
For sure.
And the 99's out because I feel like I have a better chance at beating the 7 down the stretch in the playoffs, right? I want – what
or
I can
Ty
control
Gibbs.
Is be right – yeah, or Ty Gibbs or my man J.J. Haley.
Yeah.
You know? there's a little bit of that, but do race car drivers really – do many of them really think about that in the heat of the moment? No, you just push whoever's in front of you and you try to win.
Yeah, and you try to position yourself to give yourself a chance to win. So – last but not least, penny stacker of the week. So under pace laps of the ARCA race, I'm warming my tires up, and I get to the top of the S's, that little right-hand turn, that little kink at the top. And I'm like, oh, look, there's a Corey LaJoie flag flying behind some guy's motorhome. The next day, practice and qualifying for the cup car, I'm like, oh, look, you still got it flying in the breeze. So Sunday morning, I'm like, Levi, let's go take a golf cart ride. So Levi and I jump on the golf cart, and I went on a mission to find this guy with the Corey LaJoie flag, the only one.
Love it.
I mean, the campground at Watkins Glen was freaking packed. Found this guy. His name was Bruce from Ontario. Him and his wife said they'd been coming there 16 years. Didn't ask why he likes me. But he took his flag down, laid it on his table, signed that sucker.
Nice. Said,
thanks for the support.
That's awesome.
Penny Stacker of the Week, Bruce.
Thank you, Bruce.
I think that was his name.
Saw a lot of Corey LaJoie merch. I went to Millbridge on Saturday. A couple of Corey LaJoie shirts.
Love that.
Nice. Yeah.
Probably available at CoreyLaJoieRacing.com/merch if you wanted to buy some yourself. And then maybe you could be the Penny Stacker of the Week. But you guys are also, everybody who listens to this is the Penny Stacker of the Week. But this week it's Bruce. He's a numero uno. But make sure you continue to, now that we have a new face and voice to the show, and Daniel Trotta asking the hard-hitting questions, you guys fire over with hashtag Penny for your thoughts. Give us some good ones so we can generate some more chatter for you guys. Also, like, download, share, rate, review. Tell us what you think about Danielle. Join us on the show right here in Stacking Pennies. I'm super excited. We're excited about the future of what we're able to give you guys for content. So as always, guys, keep stacking pennies and tune in to Spare Change and the race at Daytona Saturday night. This is Stacking Pennies, presented by Mobile One. Have a great day.